Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. We have a guest on today, Joseph Chung, who is the cyber principal for Toggle Industry LLC, and really had some interesting input about things that are happening lately with some ransomware. Joseph, welcome today. How are you?
Good morning, Chris. Thank you so much. I'm doing well.
Well, that's good, and it's good to hear. So first of all, Joseph, give us a little background on yourself, how you got to where you're at, where you feel that you fit in the cyber world, type of things.
Well, firstly, I really want to start off by saying I really appreciate the time that I'm able to come onto this podcast. And secondly, I should say, I am actually not a Colorado native. I was born in Dallas, Texas, and I found myself here in Colorado Springs when I was a cadet at the U.S. Air Force Academy. I was there for 2 years, and it wasn't my cup of tea. I think I'll put that lightly. So I got out of the academy, and I instantly started contracting within the field of cyber warfare, cybersecurity, doing support for various different departments, doing a little bit of pen testing, penetration testing, network vulnerability assessments, and from there merged off and started doing within the civilian sector. So I think in a really quick nutshell, that's where I'm coming from. I have been in the industry for about 10 years. I started off at a very young age, and you know, here I am today. So
okay. So yeah, and I just seen your picture online. You are in a younger age. Do you consider yourself millennial generation?
You know, every time someone asks me if I consider myself that, I always have to counter back and say, you know, what exactly is the definition of a millennial? If we're going by just by age, then absolutely. However, I think what really separates myself from, you know, my friends and colleagues who are also in the millennial age group is the mindset. I surround myself with individuals who have the forward thinking component, who want to build something for ourselves. So going back to your question, you know, Chris, I'm definitely a millennial by age, but from a mindset, probably not. I hope not, at least.
Really? You know, I don't see it as a bad thing. I actually really almost associate myself that I'm a millennial, even though I'm sure a little bit, we'll say, more senior than the average age for millennial. My young nephew, him and I worked a lot really close together, and he had started going to school almost the same year I started going to college. And I went for 11 years, and he graduated the year after I finished my last time I was in college full time. And really, it was that adoption of the technology over the learning experience that I think really associated with what they're calling the millennial generation. And it's those people that kind of grew up with technology or went through their education process with it available that understand that entirely and kind of make that association. So I feel like I'm one.
Right. You know, Chris, you make an excellent point. I have to admit, I take very strong advantage of the fact that I have a younger face. And because a lot of times, especially in the field of cyber warfare, cybersecurity, a lot of my colleagues who are my age or who look like my age, and the people that I work with, we grew up in the field of cybersecurity. We grew up in the field where we had cell phones and laptops and social media. We had access to the internet. We essentially were enculturated into this dynamic. So I do take advantage of that at some points in time. So
yeah, and that ability to kind of bridge the gap then, like you said you're doing with, you know, the more seasoned generation. We won't try to categorize what and where we fit in, but there's definitely that line between the people that grew up with technology and the people that grew up before. And I think that bridging that gap from whichever side you do it, it looks like you do it from the little bit younger side and I do it from maybe the top side. Maybe we can come together in the middle and have something overall that works to kind of bridge that divide.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a break here for a minute and then we'll come back and talk some more details about what you do in penetration testing.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, so welcome back. We are here with Joseph Chung, who is from Colorado Springs, one of our Colorado people that's not a native, he says, but has been in cybersecurity for a while here. It's affiliated with the U.S. Air Force Academy here. Joseph, we had talked before the show about some interesting things you're seeing come in with a lot of clientele with ransomware. Tell us about this trend and pattern you're receiving here.
Well, you know, Chris, it's not necessarily, unfortunately, a random pattern anymore. And let me just start off by giving a quick 30-second brush over of ransomware. Ransomware is a program, a malicious piece of software that comes onto your computers, whether you are a mom-and-pop shop or you are a multinational corporation. And this piece of software comes onto your network and encrypts all of your important documents that you need to do business or maybe even save lives. And it says, in order for you to have access to these files again, you must pay an undisclosed amount of money. And ransomware can be inexpensive, going anywhere between, you know, $5,000 to $7,000, all the way up to several millions of dollars. And what we have seen here in the industry is we've seen about a 300% increase in ransomware attacks across the board. I was in D.C. earlier this year chatting with some of my government colleagues, and they had told me that they had corroborated very similar information. And they said, it is interesting that we've seen such an increase, such a dramatic increase in ransomware. And going back to here in Colorado Springs, for some of you may know, and even you, Chris, you may have even come across, the National Cybersecurity Center. Recently, Colorado stated that they're going to make Colorado Springs the National Cybersecurity Center. And by doing so, they have painted a target on a lot of the businesses here in Colorado Springs because they keep referring to a term, the unfortunate 50,000. I liken that term to state that there are a lot of local businesses here that are either not interested or don't have the money to have an enterprise-grade cybersecurity platform. Now, ransomware is becoming a bigger and bigger issue because it is it indiscriminately affects businesses, whether you are a bakery, whether you are a library, whether you are a doctor, lawyer, CPA, it doesn't really matter. The fact of the matter is you are in business, and the attackers assume, most often than not correctly, that you have some free liquidity, which is why they start the ransoms at $7,000. And the reason I have that figure is because I'm looking at Bitcoin transactions. Ransomware is typically paid in the form of Bitcoins. And Bitcoin is a decentralized currency that, I mean, by pure definition, there is no centralized bank for it. So when individuals exchange Bitcoins for services, it is theoretically an untraceable or an unpinable source, if you will. So once you transact Bitcoins, and I believe last I checked, one Bitcoin is about $1,200. Last year, they were at $300. But now because of the rise of Bitcoins, we believe that this is one of the reasons that we have seen such a high attack. So in the last 2 weeks combined, Chris, we had five inbound 911s, if you will, people who are not our clients, but calling and said, oh my goodness, we just got ransomware and we did a quick Google search and your name came up as a source who could potentially help us to decrypt our files. And unfortunately, it's really depressing to hear because I'm talking about people who've been in business for 20 to 30 years and overnight they are unable to transact business, and it's very possible that even if they paid an X amount dollar amount, the fact that their files were encrypted and the fact that they lost access to their personally identifiable information for both their clients as well as internal organization, they could potentially lose their business. The FBI could get involved because of cyber warfare attack, and they could be subjected to very expensive legal liabilities because of the fact that their computers were not compliant. So those are some of the issues that we've seen. I mean, ransomware is such a big problem these days, because I don't know about you, Chris, but I personally don't want to have to pay $250,000 per device that may result from not only the ransom, but the potential loss of business, the legal liability, any government regulation that may come against me. And that's what it costs on average, Chris. On average, it costs $250,000 to
for a small business, or are we talking?
We had five.
We're talking like a bigger business that ends up paying that much? Or are you talking the mom and pop shops? That'll put them out of business.
Absolutely. I'm talking any business of any size, which is why I stated cyber warfare, and especially ransomware, it attacks indiscriminately. It does not care who you are. And there's actually a few articles on our website where you can go and take a look. On average, the average loss for any network-connected device, whether you're a mom-and-pop shop or whether you're a large corporation, you could be faced with up to $250,000 of penalties, loss of business, lawsuits, and et cetera.
Yeah.
It is a very, very expensive procedure, and I don't know many businesses who could survive a $250,000 loss at overnight. You know, it's you worked your entire life to build a business, and then you lose it. It is absolutely depressing.
So, this is interesting. But first, I want to go back. You said something about the increase in ransomware. Is there a particular? I mean, where do they get it? Obviously, these people aren't all making a unique ransomware. There's probably some virus or product somewhere that they're buying that does this to their attackers, the people they're attacking. Do you know anything about that part?
Are you talking about where the ransomware is coming from?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's an excellent question, Chris. And I will add one thing, okay? A lot of times people do not consider that just a simple or quick Google search could potentially result in ransomware. We call those attacks drive-by ransomware, because you're going online. Let's say you're a bakery. Well, I'll use that as an example, okay? And you're going online. You're trying to find a new vendor. You're just going through Google, Bing, Yahoo, whatever search engine you want. And then all of a sudden, you get an email that says, "Hey, I saw that you were requesting information for XYZ." You open the email, and then there's a link. You click on that link, or an attachment automatically downloads itself to your computer. And unknowingly to you, you have just opened a back door on your computer or on your network to allow for ransomware or some other form of malicious code to come onto your computer and start monitoring traffic.
Mm-hmm.
People don't realize a lot of times that ransomware is not instantaneous. It will monitor your computer for days, if not weeks on end, to determine what kind of information is being transacted, what kind of internet certificates are being passed around. So in the world of social media, whenever you log on to a computer, you type in your username, you type in your password, and then you transmit a certificate and air quote securely, and it goes from your computer to your internet provider, and then your ISP, and then from the ISP to whatever social media networking site you have. Just from a really quick perspective, I'll give you an example here, Chris, right? Let's say you leave your home, you go to Starbucks, and then go from Starbucks to the office. How many points of entry or how many possibilities is it that you could get into a car accident or you could get pulled over by a cop? There are so many different open points that you are unaware of, but it could happen. So with the concept of ransomware, it's not necessarily the programs that people are finding. It's the fact that there is so much money, unfortunately, in the dark web that individuals, malicious hackers or malicious organizations, malicious people in general, are creating variants upon variants of different forms of ransomware. There are so many different flavors, if you will, of ransomware that some of them attack based off your email. Some of them attack based off of social media. If you go to an internet cafe or a coffee shop and you hop onto their free wireless network,
mm-hmm.
What is guaranteeing or what is ensuring that you are not picking up something by sitting on that open network? There are so many potential points of entry to your computer. So,
yeah.
Ransomware can come from anywhere.
And you mentioned dark web. Now, explain that one, because you know we've had a lot of interest in it. I had a guest supposed to be on last week. We didn't quite work out to talk about the dark web and what's being done there. Give us what is the dark web, and what do you do and on there? I mean, you personally, what kind of interface do you have?
Sure. Well, let me start by giving a quick 30-second sentence about that as well. What we know when we go on to Google or any other search engines, Bing, whatever else, whenever we find something on the internet, we are only accessing about 2% of the known web. 2%. Facebook, Netflix, any other social media site, everything that we know today, we're only working in about 2% of the internet. The other 98 or whatever percent it is now, or in at this moment, is classified as the dark web. Those are the unmapped or the unclassified portions of the web. That is where a lot of the illicit transactions we see in movies or anything, it's actually not far off. What we see in spy movies where people go online and conduct transactions, that's a very flowery depiction of the dark web. On the dark web, you can buy social security numbers, credit cards, all the way to all the things that you don't want to imagine. Anything that you could possibly want, you can probably find on the dark web. So let's take a social security number.
So do you start this with a search? How would you start looking on the dark web?
So you can use the Tor network, like the Tor browser. The Tor browser is a piece of software that allows you to delve into the dark net, or in the dark web, if you will, because by that definition, you're trying to bypass the network configuration, the network protocol that is set up in Chrome, Firefox, Microsoft Edge, Safari. They all have specific security measures in place to prevent you from gaining access to that part of the internet because one of two reasons. One, there's a lot of illicit activity going on, and two, they want to protect your machine from getting infected. So by using the Tor network or the Tor channel, you can essentially create a quote-unquote secure channel or a direct access line to the net, to the dark web.
Interesting.
By gaining access to the dark web, you can look, but if you touch, the chances of you bringing something you don't want back is very, very high.
Okay, so let's talk more about that in a minute. I want to take a break here really quick, and we'll come back in a couple minutes.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
All right, so welcome back. On with me, Joseph Chung. We're still talking about the dark web. We were really interested before we broke about you said Tor, getting onto the dark web. Anybody can do this. Is this something that anybody wants to do, though? I mean, would you recommend that somebody says, let me give this a try and see what I can find?
Well, I mean, we all heard the saying, curiosity killed the cat. In this case, if your curiosity gets the better of you and you use the Tor browser and access the net, you may actually get a knock on the door from the FBI, depending on what you do. So my professional opinion and my professional recommendation would be to stay off the Tor network unless you're looking to do something less than honorable or less than ethical. So I'll leave it at that, Chris.
Okay. Well, I mean, somebody has to be on there, though, to do the things that stop the people doing less than honorable, less than ethical. So somebody's got to get on there, right?
Well, there are tools that can go and crawl the dark web. So myself, as a cybersecurity engineer, per se, whenever I put on that hat, I have tools that go and peruse the dark net. So I myself am not putting myself in the front line.
Yeah.
But the benefit of that is by having these nodes and points of access crawling the Tor network, it allows me to see, okay, this is what is new, this is what's popping in the industry in that specific segment of the dark web. This is, for example, all of a sudden we see a blast of 1 million social security numbers. Okay, let's go investigate that and determine how those social security numbers are coming into the dark web and how can we stop that from happening. Basically, we want to create an antidote, but more importantly, we want to take a look at the behavior of those malicious actors. We want to see how are those people acting and how can we create a better detection engine that allows us to go through and deploy to our clients and say, hey, when XYZ activity starts to happen on your computer, flag it. Mm-hmm. We want to see what is actually happening there. So that way, I don't have to be actively browsing in the dark web, but we do have software that allows us to go through and identify the behavior as such. So we try to limit our perspective as much as possible because we already have agreements and relationships with the FBI. We don't need them coming back and saying, hey, you did X, Y, and Z, having us to justify our actions, if that makes sense, Chris.
So. Yeah, and we kind of went off on a tangent there talking about the ransomware, and we were like, where's it come from? So the whole dark web explanation was, you know, how are people getting this out, getting across? But then let's go back. You said you've had 5 cybersecurity ransomware attacks in the last short amount of time. Did you say week, month? What?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. So tell us how, you know, and what we should be worried about. If, you know, this is happening 5 times, people in Colorado Springs, I'd imagine they're either local or somewhere in your network here. But what do we do? How do we, if we're the average company and we don't want this to happen, what's the steps we follow?
Sure, sure. And firstly, these 5 calls, we had 2 come from Pueblo and 1 come from Denver and 1 come from and a couple here in the Springs as well. But this is what we tell all of our clients. When was the last time, and I ask every single one of my prospects this, when was the last time you had a network vulnerability assessment? A network vulnerability assessment is a really quick and cursory view into the existing topology of your network. So we take a look to see what hardware you have deployed into your network, what kind of computers, what kind of software you're using. And from there, we have a very frank conversation. Well, we'll take a look at your architecture and we'll say, all right, Mr. and Mrs. Customer, we have found XYZ vulnerability. And these are how these potential vulnerabilities have affected our other customers. And this is how you could potentially lose information, lose your credit card information, lose other personally identifiable information, and what that will do to your business.
Mm-hmm.
It is very important for businesses to have that conversation with their IT staff. And if they don't have a dedicated IT staff, or if they don't have even a third-party vendor, it is very important to begin sourcing a vendor that is an expert in not only information technology, but also information assurance. One of the biggest problems, Chris, that we come across is our clients and our prospects, they don't understand the difference between IT and IA. Again, that's information technology and information assurance. Whenever we go in and we speak to a client, we say, hey, so we are a cybersecurity vendor, and we work alongside with IT. As soon as I say that, they say, oh, well, we already have an IT person. We are good to go.
Uh-huh.
But then I turn around and I ask that question. I always ask that question. When was the last time you had a network vulnerability assessment? They pause and they say, I have no idea what that is.
So I would ask you that, just to stop you there and say, you just defined 2 separate things. Is there any way we can put that under one company, one term? Because literally, this is the problem, is that us technical people have all these words and acronyms to explain this stuff. And like IA, IT, all these different things, and we just run through them. But what is it in layman's terms that we're doing?
Sure.
Give us that kind of high-level understanding of what we're talking about here.
Well, I will give you a term that myself and my colleagues have coined. We call ourselves a total solutions provider. A lot of times we see, and I'm sure you're aware too, Chris, we see MSPs. An MSP is a managed service provider. We consider ourselves a total service provider. Toggle Industries last year partnered up with an organization locally here as well, Technology Inc. And they are your day-to-day business operations IT specialist.
Mm-hmm.
They do everything from your phone system to your internet brokerage to as simple as deploying an access point for internet at your office, all the way to rebuilding your entire network stack.
Uh-huh. Well,
we partnered with them.
You kind of went into 2 things. You said IT several different times about different things. So information technology, the IT piece, is any electronic equipment you have that either is for communicating by digital, voice, connecting computers, anything else you use within your company, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And then the stack thing, you just went kind of off the deep end there. What the heck is a stack?
So a network stack is your backbone. For businesses that have anywhere between 5, 10, or 50 plus, all the way up to 10,000 users, a network stack is your server, your switch, your security appliance, everything that allows you to communicate seamlessly internally at the office. So you send emails back and forth within your clients, within your clients and within your office employees. By having a network stack, it essentially is a dedicated piece of hardware and software that serves only your business.
Okay.
A network stack is also part where it includes all of your files, all your sensitive documentation. So everything is at your office. So.
Okay. Now you talked about information assurance. So describe that. I mean, that's all your information, all your data, where your files are stored on one computer, on your local computer that's in front of you on a desktop, how they're backed up on the network, how they're taken offsite on a backup. Explain that whole information assurance scope.
Sure. I will actually go a step farther. Information assurance works in tandem with information security. So whenever a traditional IT specialist or a traditional MSP, managed service provider, comes into your business and they say, oh, we're just going to throw in a brand new firewall, they are still calling that, those legacy IT MSP individuals, they are calling that cybersecurity when it, by definition, is not. Information assurance and information security is the principle of me going into and working in tandem with the business's existing information technology specialist and say, all right, you've deployed XYZ solution in. Now, I'm going to try and break it. And after I have successfully broken your deployment, your network stack, I'm going to have a conversation with you and determine how can we work together and collaborate to provide our mutual client now with a more secure infrastructure. So by us collaborating with Technology, they design the network stack, I help him with it, and I help them with it, and we design the entire system with security in mind and convenience second.
Okay.
What
so,
that means for the client is...
Okay, go ahead. Finish that thought.
Yeah. What that means is I first ask the client, how important is security to you? They give me an answer, and then I go back and ask, okay, how important is convenience to you and your staff? They stop, and they're saying, okay, well, how much security do I need? And because it quite literally is an inverse trade-off. The more security you have, the less convenient it will be for your staff and your employees. The more convenient it is for your clients and staff, the less secure the system will be. So we go through, we deploy the entire system, but our primary focus when we deploy a new backbone, a new stack, is to go through and say, okay, Mr. Customer, we want to try and ensure your day-to-day operational capability without sacrificing security, and most importantly, while securing your endpoints, so that if something tries to come into your network, we will at least see it, and you are no longer the low-hanging fruit, because that's truly who the perpetrators, the actors in cyber warfare, that's who they go after. They go after low-hanging fruit, and it is my job to make sure my clients are not low-hanging fruit, and to most importantly, educate them on what is and is not proper security protocol.
Okay. So, yeah, thanks for the explanation, and I do that to everybody. I try to get us out of the acronyms and the assumptions that we all make. So the ransomware now, if we've done our network right and we're saving our data that's put on our network or on our servers, we're backing it up somewhere else. Why does it matter if somebody comes and encrypts it and holds ransom? Can't we just go to the backup and restore it and, you know, get rid of them?
You know, Chris, you've actually touched on what actually happened to one of my clients. We do, so we work with vendors who do offsite backup, and we also do total offsite server replication. But I'll get into that later. Essentially, the one of our clients who called in, he was the MSP and said, oh my gosh, I'm getting sued by this client because of ransomware. And here's why. The offsite backup that he had used had also gotten infected. Not only was his client's computer completely locked down by ransomware, the vendor with which he used for offsite backup had also been infected by the same piece of ransomware. So he was looking quite literally at two lawsuits, one from his client and one from the offsite backup provider.
Interesting.
So Let me caveat here real quick, Chris. As a security engineer, I tell every single one of my clients this. There is absolutely no such thing as a 100% secure network. Doesn't exist. We come up with better security architectures. We come up with better detection. No matter what happens, there's always going to be something bigger, better, faster, and smarter coming out. And it is our job as security engineers within our industry to try and figure out what is the next step before it happens. We don't always succeed, but what we can do is put something in place so that our clients aren't left out in the cold, or that we have done and performed our fiduciary responsibility to our clients, making sure that, again, they are not the low-hanging fruit.
So, yeah.
But
so
you can set up a system properly. Yeah.
So if you and this you said earlier, and I just want to talk about the low-hanging fruit clients, that you go in, you give them a best recommendation for putting everything together. Isn't there somewhere that they can just get the best recommendations for a general business their size? Here's a list of everything you need to do and put it right in?
Sure. You know, as a, since we're talking about that, I'll just go ahead and state two things. One, we have the conversation, but most importantly, we have packages as low as $325. And that gives the client 24/7 monitored support. And if something happens, they call it and say, hey, look, this just happened. Can you please explain to me, should I be concerned, and what is the next best step? So that is one step. If they choose to have a conversation with us, and if they choose to let us try and secure their system, we have packages that are low that allow them to pay that small amount of price and have the peace of mind. But most importantly, going back to your other questions, where you say, you know, if I wanted to give them a shopping list, they wanted to go out and acquire their own hardware, their own software, they're absolutely free to do that. But this is something that I'll say then right now. As a business owner and any other local businesses here in Colorado or anywhere in the nation, if you are not in cybersecurity, that means you are probably an expert in your own industry. You're an expert lawyer, you're an expert doctor, you're an expert baker. Whatever the case is, you are an expert in that field. But the reason that people go out and they have conversations with people like myself or my partners is because they are not those experts in cybersecurity. Does that make sense, Chris? We want to make sure that we are here as a collaborative partner. We want to be your most valued vendor. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, if your computers don't work, if you do not have the ability to communicate, process transactions, your expertise in whatever their industry is doesn't matter, because then they'll be out of business. So they can go out and acquire their own hardware and software and security solutions, but when something happens, if and when something happens, who are they going to go to? I mean, are they going to go down the street and go to Best Buy? Are they going to go talk to their friend next door? Are they going to talk to a qualified security engineer?
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I guess that's
what I'll leave you with. I mean,
yeah, fair enough to that comment. We're always looking for people with a good perspective on, you know, how can we get some help? What is happening? And you gave us some great insight here. So thanks so much for joining today, Joseph. Kind of getting to the point where we're wrapping up here, but I always like to give our guests a chance to get out any URLs, things people can get a hold of you, anything you'd like to get out or ways people can get a hold of you for services or products.
Okay. Well, if people have questions, they can always email us at info@toggleind.com, or they can also visit us online at toggleind.com. There are various articles online that we have published where individuals can go on and just get some very, very, very basic information about what is impacting them and what their next course of action is. And something very important, we offer completely free network vulnerability assessments. My philosophy is, the conversation is always free. I'm a certified mentor through the Air Force Association Cyber Patriot, and I teach a class every Monday. And it's always free to have a conversation. If people want to utilize their services after having that conversation, that's totally fine. But if they don't, that's okay too. My job has been done in the sense that I am trying to educate my fellow partners here in the ecosystem, here in Colorado Springs. You know, I could be up in Denver, Chris, but I like it here. I mean, if you could see it, I have a lake behind me. I have a mountain view in front of me. It is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
I want to stay here.
Yeah.
So that's what I would leave with. I mean, I would say people can find us online. People can always reach out to me and my staff, and we can have that conversation. So it's completely free.
All right. Hey, well, thanks a lot for joining today, Joseph. And we do appreciate the insight here, and you have a great day.
Thank you so much, Chris. Have a good one.
The views or opinions expressed by me during this podcast are my own and are not those of my employer, Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.